babe? Ready for bed? I hope you don't mind that I wasn't really planning on going to sleep right now. Well, I was at this bookstore today, and they had this beautiful copy of Pride and Prejudice, like, in that classic, like, leather-bound style. Yeah, I may or may not have shelled a little bit more money on this than I wanted to, but oh, babe. Look, isn't it pretty? Yeah, I know. I'm a sucker for old-style books. But it's Pride and Prejudice, love. You know it's my favorite. Well, I wasn't planning on staying up on that reading this, but you know how Pride and Prejudice, you know how Jane Austen gets me. But babe, you want me to read it to you? Really? I mean, you don't have to stay up with me, you know. I mean, I can read silently by myself. I'll even just, like, have my, you bought me that book light for my birthday, and then I could just clip that onto my book so I don't have to keep you up, and you're sweet. Yeah, I had a cup of tea by my side, so, because I was prepared to read. You really want me to read to you? Okay. So, you better not fall asleep in the middle of me reading, okay? Because this is, like, the greatest love story of all time. And it's beautiful, it's romantic, and it's poetic, and it's... I know, I'm rambling. You know how I get. I'm sorry. Okay. Serious face. Serious bedtime reading face. I won't be able to read it if you keep looking at me like that. Oh, focus on the book. You don't sass me. Jesus. It is the truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. Yes, the infamous line. However little known the feelings or view of such a man may be on his entering a neighborhood, the truth is so well fixed in the minds of the surrounding families that he is considered as the rightful property of some one or the other of their daughters. "My dear Mr. Bennet," said his lady to him one day, "have you heard that Netherfield Park is let it laugh?" Oh, you don't want me to do the voice. Okay, I won't, I promise. I'm sorry. Mr. Bennet replied that he had not. "But it is," returned she, "for Mrs. Long had just been there, and she told me all about it." Mr. Bennet made no answer. "Do you not want to know who has taken it?" cried his wife impatiently. "You want to tell me, and I have no objection to hearing it." This was invitation enough. "Why, my dear, you must know. Mrs. Long said that Netherfield is taken by a young man of large fortune from north of England, and he came down on Monday in a chaise and four to see the place, and was so delighted with it that he agreed with Mr. Morris immediately that he is to take possession before Michaelmas? It's Victorian literature, dude. There are some words in here I don't know. Fine, do you know what the word means?" No, I didn't think so. So don't sass me. "And some of his servants are to be in the house by the end of next week." "What is his name?" "Bingley." "Is he married or single?" "Oh, single, my dear, to be sure. A single man of large fortune, 4,000 or 5,000 a year? What a fine thing for our girls." "How so? How can it affect them?" "My dear Mr. Bennet," replied his wife, "how can you be so tiresome? You must know I am thinking of his marrying one of them." "Is that his design in settling here?" "Design? Nonsense! How can you talk so? But it is very likely that he may fall in love with one of them, and therefore you must visit him as soon as he comes." "I see no occasion for that. You and the girls may go, or you may send them by themselves, which perhaps will be still better, for you are as handsome as any of them. Mr. Bingley might like you the best of the party. My dear, you flatter me. I certainly have had my share of beauty, but I do not pretend to be anything extraordinary now. When a woman has 5 grown-up daughters, she ought to give over thinking of her own beauty. In such cases, a woman has not much often beauty to think of, But, my dear, you must go and see Mr. Bingley when he comes to the neighborhood. It is more than I engage for, I assure you. But consider your daughters. Only think what an establishment it would be if one of them, Sir William and Lady Lucas, are determined to go merely on that account, for in general, you know they visit no newcomers. Indeed, you must go, for it would be impossible for us to visit him if you do not. You are over-scrupulous, surely. I dare say Mr. Bingley will be very glad to see you, and I will send a few lines by you to assure him of my hearty consent to his marrying whichever he chooses of our girls, though I must throw in a good word for my little Lizzie. I desire you'll do no such thing. Lizzie is not a bit better than the others, and I am sure she is not half as so handsome as Jane, nor so good-humored as Lydia. But you are always giving her the preference. They have none of them much to recommend them, replied he. They are silly and ignorant like other girls. But Lizzie has something more of quickness than her sisters. Yeah, what kind of dad says that about their own kids? Like, seriously. Yeah, I'll keep going. Mr. Bennet, how can you abuse your own children in such a way? You take delight in vexing me. You have no compassion on my poor nerves. You mistake me, my dear. I have the highest respect for your nerves. They are my old friends. I've heard you mention them with consideration these 20 years at least. you do not know what I suffer. But I hope you will get over it and live to see many young men of 4,000 a year come into the neighborhood. It will be no use to us if 20 such should come, since you will not visit them. Depend upon it, my dear, that when there are 20, I will visit them all. Mr. Bennet was so odd a mixture of quick parts, sarcastic humor, reserve, and caprice, that the experience of 23 years had been insufficient to make his wife understand his character. Her mind was less difficult to develop. She was a woman of mean understanding, little information, and uncertain temper. When she was discontented, she fancied herself nervous. The business of her life was to get her daughters married. Its solace was visiting and news. Are you tired of my voice yet? No, you want to know more about the characters, right? Jane Austen. She is a credit to her craft, really. I love her so much. Yes. Second chapter? Are you sure? You don't think we're... No, okay. Just one more chapter, though, for tonight. We can read more tomorrow. Okay, one more chapter. Chapter 2. Mr. Bennet was among the earliest of those who waited on Mr. Bingley. Yes, he gave in to Mrs. Bennet's demands. Of course he would. He had always intended to visit him, though to the last always assuring his wife that he should not go. Until the evening after the visit was paid, she had no knowledge of it. It was then disclosed in the following manner. Observing his second daughter employed in trimming a hat, he suddenly addressed her with, "I hope Mr. Bingley will like it, Lizzie." "We are not in a way to know what Mr. Bingley likes," said her mother resentfully, "since we are not to visit." "But you forget, Mamma," said Elizabeth, "that we shall meet him at the assemblies, and that Mrs. Long has promised to introduce him." "I do not believe Mrs. Long will do any such thing. She has 2 nieces of her own. She is a selfish, hypocritical woman, and I have no opinion of her." "No more have I," said Mr. Bennet, "and I am glad to find that you do not depend on her serving you." Mrs. Bennet deigned not to make any reply, but unable to contain herself, began scolding one of her daughters. "Don't keep coughing so, Kitty, for heaven's sake. Have a little compassion on my nerves. You tear them to pieces." "Kitty has no discretion in her cough," said her father. "She times them ill." "I do not cough for my own amusement," replied Kitty fretfully. "When is your next ball to be, Lizzie?" "Tomorrow fortnight." "Aye, so it is," cried her mother. "Mrs. Long does not come back till the day before, so it will be impossible for her to introduce him, for she will not know him herself." "Then, my dear, you may have the advantage of your friend, and introduce Bingley to her."
"Impossible, Mr. Bennet, impossible, when I am not acquainted with him myself. How can you be so teasing?"
"I honour your circumspection. A fortnight's acquaintance is certainly very little. One cannot know what a man really is by the end of a fortnight. But if we do not venture, somebody else will, and after all, Mrs. Long and her nieces must stand their chance, and therefore, as she will think it an act of kindness, if you decline the office, I will take it on myself."
The girls stared at their father. Mrs. Bennet said only, "Nonsense, nonsense!"
"What can be the meaning of that emphatic exclamation?" cried he. "You consider the forms of introduction and the stress that is laid on them nonsense? I cannot agree with you there, cannot quite agree with you there. What say you, Mary? For you are a young lady of deep reflection, I know, and read great books and make extracts."
While Mary wished to say something very sensible, but Mary wished to say something very sensible, but knew not how.
While Mary is adjusting her ideas, he continued, "Let us return to Mr. Bingley."
"I am sick of Mr. Bingley," cried his wife.
"I am sorry to hear that, but why did you not tell me so before? If I had known as such this morning, I certainly would not have called on him.
It is very unlucky, but as I have actually paid the visit, we cannot escape the acquaintance now."
The astonishment of the ladies was just what he had wished, that of Mr. Bennet perhaps surpassing the rest. Though when the first tumult of joy was over, she began to declare it was what she had expected all the while.
"How good it was in you, my dear Mr. Bennet! But I knew I should persuade you at last. I was sure you loved our girls too well to neglect such an acquaintance. How pleased I am, and it is such a good joke, too, that you should have gone this morning and never said a word about it till now."
"Now, Kitty, you may cough as much as you choose," said Mr. Bennet, and as he spoke he left the room, fatigued with the raptures of his wife. "What an excellent father you have, girls," said she, when the door was shut. "I do not know how you ever make him amends for his kindness, or me either, for that matter. At our time of life, it is not so pleasant, I can tell you, to be making new acquaintances every day. But for your sakes, we would do anything. Lydia, my love, though you are the youngest, I dare say Mr. Bingley will dance with you at the next ball."
"Oh," said Lydia stoutly, "I am not afraid, for though I am the youngest, I am the tallest."
The rest of the evening was spent conjecturing how soon he would return Mr. Bennet's visit, and determining when they should ask him to dinner.
"Oh, no more. Come on. We have all the nights at our disposal to read. It's time to go to bed."